Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. It may make it easier with your family tomorrow, or it may make it harder, that Donald Trump won't be the only headline political obsession that everyone will want to talk about. There will also now be sexual harassment and sexual assault, which at least everyone agrees are wrong. But while the current moment may have been sparked by the likes of Harvey Weinstein, it has now circled around to Roy Moore and, unfortunately, Donald Trump.
Well, he denies it. Look, he denies it.
So maybe you're not off the hook with your red state relatives after all. But the sexual misconduct conversation can go seriously off the rails, even without the party politics part. Sure, we're focusing with outrage and disbelief on things like Charlie Rose saying what he did wasn't wrongdoing. Listen carefully as this journalist asked Charlie Rose about it on the street.
You want to say anything to those accusers that's accusing you? You want to say anything to those accusers, the people that's accusing you of all these wrongdoings?
It's not wrongdoings.
It's not wrongdoings. Charlie Rose caught by a photographer in Manhattan Monday night. Outrageous and unbelievable and worth talking about, but something is missing. Arguably the most prevalent part of the whole story. Here is Al Franken's victim, Leanne Tweeden, from her initial public comments last week.
You know, this is happening in Hollywood. I think we live in a bubble. I live in a bubble. I've worked in the entertainment business, sports, radio, television, commercials, movies for over 20 years. And I think because all of this is happening here, I mean, this has, you know, I mean, with Al now in the Senate. So this is kind of Hollywood and kind of politics, but it's sort of the same sort of stage, you know, it's just sort of parallel. But this is happening in middle America. This is happening, you know, for women that work at Chili's. This is happening for women who work in an office building somewhere in Iowa and Kansas and Florida. I mean, this is happening to women who have you know, no power and no say to speak up.
Leanne Tweeden last week. The women getting all the publicity are those who were victimized by famous men. But what about the ubiquitous abuse of women in regular jobs by men in regular jobs who hold power over the women? Charlie Rose and Harvey Weinstein can lose their jobs. Alabamans can choose not to vote for Roy Moore. We don't know if they will. But what can actually be done to stop everyone else who doesn't attract the media spotlight? Joining me now to talk about that, Barbara Ehrenreich. She has written classic books related to all this, like Nickel and Dimed, or Not Getting By in America. This land is their land and the hearts of men. She's also the founder of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which promotes journalism about inequality in the United States. And Alyssa Quart. She writes the Outclassed column for The Guardian and is executive editor of Ehrenreich's Economic Hardship Reporting Project. She has a forthcoming book called Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. They've each been writing various things the last few weeks, and they have a new op-ed together in The Guardian today. Barbara, welcome back. Alyssa, welcome to WNYC.
Glad to be back.
Oh, yeah, thrilled to be here, Brian.
And listeners, help us report this story. Seriously, if you don't work in media or politics or entertainment, how has the Me Too movement reached your industry, or how does it need to? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You can tell us your story if you choose, or just talk more generally about your field or your industry. 212-433-9692. We're inviting your calls on if you don't work in media or politics or entertainment, how has the Me Too movement reached your industry, or how does it need to? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Come on in. Alyssa, to start with the obvious, an article of yours in The Guardian last week reminds us that sexual harassment routinely feeds on income inequality. Should we be rooting these conversations more in that as opposed to look at this bad man and look at that bad man?
Yeah, we should absolutely be rooting it in income inequality. Women still routinely earn 83 cents on the dollar to men. They're saving less. They're unmentored often in lower income professions like waitressing, something like 80% report sexual harassment, and 88% of female construction workers do. So these numbers would, you know, go far beyond the cinematic realms.
And we all know, Barbara, by now about the hashtag Me Too. Your article proposes a new hashtag, Most of Them. What are you getting at there?
I think Alyssa proposed that.
Alyssa,
yeah. Back in your court.
Oh, most of them. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the problems with Me Too is that it's still focusing on us, on women, and, you know, we should start to think more about, you know, the problem of those who are victimizing women in workplaces.
You're right, there's a trickle-down fallacy. Barbara, maybe this is yours, and it's not about the tax bill. And you express concern about reproducing class divisions that have long existed in the feminist movement. Can you lay some of that out for us, like the trickle-down fallacy?
Well, I think there may be an idea out there that if we talk about enough glamorous women and beautiful women being sexually harassed, this will, you know, trickle down to some awareness about what goes on with the average hotel housekeeper or waitress. And we don't think that's true. We think we have to confront the pervasiveness of sexual harassment in the blue-collar workforce and some of the pink-collar workers, where it's just kind of assumed that this is going to happen. And yes, the company may bring in or have some kind of training about sexual harassment, but that's just to, you know, to protect the company in case there were to be any charges.
And between your various articles and posts, you tell the stories of a number of different women, Alyssa, including your own experiences as a young journalist, and Barbara, some of yours when you worked as a waitress and housekeeper for Nickel and Dimed. But many of all these stories have gross male behavior, so I don't want to make you say anything you're uncomfortable with, but do you want to tell someone's story to help humanize this conversation, Alyssa?
Yeah, so one of the pieces I wrote, I spoke to some young women who worked in, you know, some kind of low-level business jobs. They were making, you know, $20,000 to high $40,000, and they felt very trapped in their jobs. They worked for close to a decade for a boss who would make obscene remarks and slap their butts in front of their colleagues, and also constantly talk about how he was lawyered up and had a black card and a, you know, multi-million dollar house. And so he sort of used the low salary they were earning and his own, you know, privilege over them in various ways and power to underline they couldn't do anything. They'd never escape. And that seemed like a constant with the more women I spoke to. It was kind of like their class position and their earning power were part of what were keeping them in these terrible, toxic work relationships.
Barbara, want to add one?
Yeah, I want to add something to that, too. It occurred to me when I was working on, for the book Nickel and Dimed, well, I was always asking, why don't they just go get another job down the street? Well, even though there were many jobs available at that time, I finally understood that if you are making like $8 an hour or something and you leave your job, it will take weeks to get the next paycheck at a new job. And if you are only earning $8 an hour or even less, you don't have any kind of cushion. You can't do it. You are literally stuck there.
Let's bring in a caller. Barbara in Mount Vernon. You're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Brian. Happy holidays.
Same to
you.
Thank you
so much for all the good callers you bring to the station.
Thank you.
I've been in a professional career most of my life in healthcare and specifically in the dental field. And these are professional people, mainly men, more and more women, but when I was younger, it was predominantly male. And they're all private offices. So there were things that happened between a dentist and an assistant on a consensual basis, but there were also things that happened to me that was not at all consensual. I was propositioned by a dentist who didn't know me at all, and he stood to lose his career, his wife. he was a well-known dentist, and I was always shocked by how cavalierly he proposed. You know, I knew he was a married man, mm-hmm. and I was once working as a temp, and in offices where there's equipment, you sometimes have to put your hands, both hands, inside of a small dark room. It's called a mini dark room. And I was completely helpless. I had both my hands developing an x-ray, and I didn't hear him coming, but he came down the hall, and he grabbed me and put both his hands on my breasts. And I had nobody there to witness it, and no way to prevent him from doing it.
Alyssa, I see you reacting. Do you want to talk to Barbara?
Yeah, this is a pretty horrible story. I don't know. I mean, it's gotten so hazardous in so many professions. Like, for instance, hotel housekeepers, they now in New York and Seattle have to have panic buttons. And, yeah. And I just feel like all these stories, stories from the myths of history and also from this moment are coming forward, and that's just the concrete detail is what is hard to listen to.
So Barbara, what could prevent something like that in something as private and involving as few people as a dentist's office?
Well, as women, we always blame that somehow it was our fault or what should I have done? And I never confronted the doctor. He just kept walking down the hall as if nothing had happened. But he wasn't an owner of the office. I just think
he was an owner.
Speak out. We have to mm-hmm. confront someone on call them out on it. But in a work environment, and that's what we're talking about. It doesn't seem fair. It seems like you cannot win.
Barbara, thank you so much. I'm sorry this call ends on seems like you cannot win, but solutions aren't easy to come by, and we have to be honest about that. Let's take another call. Patricia in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Hi, good morning. I just kind of wanted to piggyback off of what the last caller just stated about women having to kind of speak up and not be afraid. I think a lot of times we kind of blame ourselves or question ourselves for what we may have done to contribute to the situation and examine that more than we examine the role of the person who is taking advantage of someone or of ourselves. The industry that I have experienced that type of behavioral witness is in higher education. As a student and on the other side, as an employee in the higher education field, with regards to like professors and instructors and students. And it amazed me that it seemed like it was something that was, even though it probably wasn't condoned or encouraged, like, people just looked like, turned a blind eye almost to the fact that instructors were propositioning students. There's a whole lot of inappropriate things just taking place between the professors and the students, and just like this relationship of authority that the instructors have over students. And it just seems as if it was just something that was normal.
And what can be done in higher education, in your opinion, at least in general? These are workplaces with structures and HR departments and things like that. What else?
I think that the women were, even, you know, you never know, the men who are victims, or, you know, who get propositioned by people in authority over them, we have to say something. Like, I think that the problem is that no one says anything. No one speaks out. So in the situation that I remember being familiar with was I was familiar with someone else's.
Whoops. Did we lose Patricia? Patricia, yes, you there? Hello? Hi, I'm sorry.
Sorry. So when I asked questions to higher ups about what was possible, you know, what could possibly be done, they didn't want to hear from me because I wasn't the person who was victimized. And that person, you know, for her own reasons, didn't want to come forward. And mm-hmm. So I would, you know, in an effort to just kind of get information for her as far as what's possible, I found that the administration was kind of very, you know, like, unwilling to really, or maybe not unwilling, but not surprised, mm-hmm. and not as taken by it or flabbergasted as I was, because, you know, like, this is a position of authority that someone has over a student, and they take advantage of it, and they're like, they've been known for doing this,
yes.
And you know, if all the students know about it, then how could that administration not know about
right.
it?
So speak up, speak up, speak up. Patricia, thank you very much. If you're just joining us, our guests are the author Barbara Ehrenreich and Alyssa Quart, who writes the Outclassed column for The Guardian. She's also the executive editor of Barbara Ehrenreich's Economic Hardship Reporting Project. And we're taking your phone calls on, if you don't work in media or politics or entertainment, how has the Me Too movement reached your industry, or how does it need to? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's talk about solutions, because I'm afraid that when we say economic equality is the cause, it can be a conversation stopper. Like, until we solve bosses having power over employees, we won't change anything, and that'll never totally happen. So your article, Barbara, mentions that here in New York, also in Seattle, there's a recent law that hotels supply their housekeepers with panic buttons. That came up briefly a minute ago. What are those, and how do they work? Do you know?
I imagine it's something you can put in your pocket and just press in case of panic, in case of, you know, an attack.
To alert hotel management. Alyssa, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, we go to management. Am I right, Alyssa?
Yeah, that's right. And also, I mean, there's some other stuff that's interesting, like the Unite Here Union in Chicago has pushed for legislation, and it had a fantastic hashtag, a fantastic name for the campaign, Hands Off, Pants On.
And funny that you mention it, and I'm going to interrupt, because also with us briefly now is Rachel Gumpert, National Press Secretary for Unite Here, the union that represents workers in the hospitality and other industries. Ms. Gumpert, thanks for joining the conversation. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for covering this.
You want to talk about that hashtag, Hands Off, Pants On?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you alluded to, in Seattle, we won a ballot measure campaign that, for the first time, forced all hotels to give all employees, union and non-union, panic buttons to help hotel workers who go into guest rooms to clean alone really have a lifeline in the case of assault or harassment. And Chicago was our latest place where we addressed this at the political standpoint. So unlike in Seattle, we didn't do a ballot measure campaign. We did a city council law. And we found that when we talked about the experience of our housekeepers, just like we found in Seattle, the reaction of the public was completely horrified at what these women were experiencing at the hands of guests. And the hashtag really comes from the fact that our hotel housekeepers, they clean rooms alone, they work alone, and they never know what is waiting for them behind the door. So for us, it's really a matter of the safety at the most basic level for these women who are cleaning rooms.
And what's happening in, well, how does a hashtag like Hands Off, Pants On lead to less actual sexual misconduct?
So the hashtag was part of a really large campaign that we ran in Chicago following the success that we had in Seattle a year ago. And in Chicago, we worked very hard to lobby the city council to take up legislation, and they actually created a law from the experiences that workers were sharing on the hashtag and from testimony that women who are housekeepers who suffered sexual assault and harassment gave at the city council. And out of that, they actually created a city council ordinance that applies to any hotel operating in Chicago city limits and forces the employer to give panic buttons to workers. And this isn't a case where, you know, workers are so hard up that employers are benevolently giving them this lifeline. This was something that's a huge victory for all hotel workers in Seattle and in Chicago. And we fought tooth and nail to force the employers to provide this. And it makes an absolute difference for these women when they're in extremely unsafe situations, not only in preventing assault and harassment, but in empowering them to feel safe when they're doing their jobs.
What else would you like to see done?
We would like to see all hotels provide these panic buttons. We would like to see more unions in hotels to give women an opportunity to report their sexual harassment without fear of retaliation. Women in general are very reluctant to report instances of sexual harassment because so often they're not believed or in a work situation they're retaliated against. By unionizing, women are able to have a voice to fight back and to speak their experience without fear of retaliation. We want guests who do sexually harass and assault workers to be banned from that hotel. They should not be allowed to come back. And we want to see more hotel workers being given additional safeguards when they do report harassment. They should never face retaliation from their employers, which is a major problem for hotel workers who are not unionized.
Barbara Ehrenreich, you're a big proponent of unions in service industries, I know. Do you want to talk to Rachel from Unite here about anything?
That all, you know, sounds great, Rachel. I'm so happy to hear what you're doing. I think, though, unions have some work to do, too. There have been reports about sexual harassment by SEIU staff, that's Service Employees International Union staff. Do you know about that?
And yeah, we're familiar with it.
Yeah. So, you know, we haven't really, unions, you can't say, are guaranteed to be a safe space for women to report sexual harassment. Some of them have some work to do.
And you know, I think it comes down to the importance of pink collar unions like Unite here having women leaders and being run by women who are reflective of the membership. In those cases of sexual harassment at SEIU and other unions, you're seeing male staff acting inappropriately to female staffers. At Unite here, we're very proud to have a woman-run leadership and a woman-run union, including our vice president of the entire union, Maria Elena Durazo, who's been an absolute warrior for women's rights. And that culture transcends the rest of our union. And we believe strongly that until unions are led by women, they will continue to have the same struggles that the rest of society has at large.
And Alyssa, I think one of your articles that refers to the Domestic Workers Alliance? Barbara, maybe it's yours. I think it's not a union because you can't exactly organize people who go into individuals' homes as individuals, but I know there's a strong presence in New York, and there's a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights that got through the New York State Legislature, things like that. Not that that can stop employers in their homes from attempting sexual assault, but it's another way that people can organize.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And with collective bargaining, it provides a huge safeguard.
So Rachel Gumpert from the Union Unite here, thank you for giving us a few minutes. We appreciate it.
Thanks for discussing this.
And as we continue to take your calls on if you don't work in politics or entertainment or the media, how has the Me Too movement reached your industry or how does it need to? 212-433-WNYC. Barbara in Howell, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had an incident this summer it just astounds me that I wasn't protected. I work for a very large New Jersey healthcare private duty agency, and I was accosted. I was pushed more than once in a home backed into a wall by a painter in a home. And I was a healthcare worker trying to take care of a woman who couldn't get up out of her chair to help me, although she tried to. I said I put my hands up. I didn't know what he was going to do. I prepared to leave the home, call my boss and tell her I had to leave. They were going to call my boss, the higher up, and tell her what I felt was going on. I got pushed by this person. Before I could leave the home, he came to the front door, held his hand over the door, his foot across me. This time he had his shirt off, full big belly exposed, pushed himself up against me so close that when he was yelling at me that I was an idiot, I could feel the spit from his mouth on my face. Now, I reported this to, this is a home, I've been doing this since I was in high school. I'm in my 60s. And no one has ever touched me in a home before like this. It was reported. I wrote it down. I went to my office, wrote a huge story, everything that happened, told them I was going to the police. Oh, no. They wouldn't allow me to go to the police. Not only that, they took me off the job, and I didn't get work for 3 weeks.
Mm.
I feel was a punishment for threatening to go to the police. And I don't get it. I could have been, if the woman wasn't sitting there shouting, it took me almost a half an hour to get out the front door. And I couldn't call the police.
It's another horrible story and another example of the kind of story that needs to get out. Alyssa, what are you thinking?
I'm just thinking that I wish there were more spaces for women who are not, you know, digital savants or actresses with huge followings to communicate these stories. I almost wish there could be like a space for feminists of all social classes to discuss this, or just women of all classes to discuss this. It's one of the things we proposed in the piece. Anyway, someone has to create it.
Barbara,
I think people will be coming forward because of all the things that are happening in the news, and I'm glad that people are coming forward. I'm so happy what's going on, because I think there will be more people like me who have been touched, pushed, and scared to death, and no one backed me up. My employer did not back me up after years of working for the same agency. I don't get that either.
Barbara, thank you for telling your story. We really appreciate
it. Thank you for doing this program. Thank you very much. I'm a listener and also a sponsor for years now.
Thank you so much. Dorothy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dorothy.
Good morning. I haven't heard one person like me who... many years ago, I got pinched in the butt when I was working in an office, and I was an athlete when I was little, and I'm kind of I've got a vibe about me, let's just say that. And I immediately hit and kicked him and yelled my bloody head off, and the entire office heard, and I want more women to immediately fight back and become violent. And since I've had that kind of persona all my life, I've rarely encountered any guy who's pulled anything. I think he gets the vibe immediately that you don't want to expose your genitals to me because they'll be coming out of your mouth. There's a great cartoon book by Roberta Gregory called Bitchy Bitch. I mean, it's a total exaggeration of how I've handled it, but I think more women have to... maybe I have too much testosterone. I don't know. But I have never, ever since I was a little girl and any little boy tried to bother me, he regretted it.
Dorothy, thank you so much for your story. And without advocating violence, Barbara Ehrenreich, did you ever see anything like that when you were reporting nickel and dime? Women who would...
No, but I love it, Dorothy. We need you to help, you know, reach other women who are frightened, and frightened for good reason. And that's why it's so important. You know, to me, this is like the rebirth of the feminist movement. I was around in the old days in the 70s, and it's like happening all over again, where women have to get together and you know, and strengthen each other and listen to each other and figure out what they're going to do.
I guess we're going to leave it at that. Alyssa, going forward, anything you want to say? Or I'll invite you back when your book Squeezed comes out next year.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
But until then.
Yeah, you know, I think we should put, you know, I advocated for this in this, the piece that we wrote, you know, pressure on local and federal governments for similar bills. I mean, this all sounds toothless, though. I mean, we joke that these are small slaps at the many male hands groping America's female workforce, because really things have to change on a more molecular level between people. Yeah.
That's the problem. It's
yeah.
so structural and so cultural.
Yeah, exactly.
Barbara, last word from you.
Well, I'm actually encouraged by this conversation. And I think the more women listening who are thinking, oh, yeah, I can speak up. I've got to help find other people, other women to connect with. You know, the more that happens, the better.
Barbara Ehrenreich has written classic books related to all this, like Nickel and Dimed. Alyssa Quart writes the Outclassed column for The Guardian, and is the founder of Barbara's Economic Hardship, is the executive editor of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which Barbara founded. Alyssa will also have a book coming out next spring called Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's fantastic.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.